and welcome to the Play We Want podcast, where I talk about and review Pay We Want and free role-playing game materials. Today, we're going to talk about Situations for Tabletop Role-Playing by Amagi Games. This is not a game. It's game-agnostic kind of system for creating different sort of role-playing game situations. There are five different types of situations that you can develop, and there's a little sheet you can fill out for each, and it just explains how to fill out the sheets. So the little blurb that they have here is a compilation of five articles, Methods for Building Situations for Tabletop Role-Playing. Each of the methods is a simple procedure. By working through one of these procedures, you'll generate the core stuff, in quotes, needed for a session or two of play. And then he talks about how it's a living document and how there's going to be updated versions. And this is from the file name. Looks like it's revision 4. And his suggested price is $2. Which is pretty good. So what I did was, let's just look at the five real quick. But there's Long Knives. It's used to create situations for intrigue that the characters are tied to. There are Transgression. It's a generator for social movements and the resistance of them. There are Broken Places. Build situations where a villain has taken over an organization. The Quest is used to generate adventures that will take the characters out on a journey. And then Predator Souls is a means for making monster hunting scenarios for your games. I thought this was a pretty cool product, so that's why I picked it up and I read through it all. It's only 29 pages, but the text is actually really sparse because it the way the text box are laid out and a little bit of art. They just show you step by step how to fill out these small text boxes on what's almost like a character sheet, but mixed between a character sheet and a flowchart of these different types of adventures. And it's pretty simple and quick. You could kind of just take the sheet and then follow along the explanation and fill in, you know, what you want. I would, after reading them, the thing I thought immediately was you kind of, no matter which one of these that you're going to do, I think that you kind of need to already have some ideas, you know, floating around in your head of what kind of thing you want to do as far as, you know, the theme, because each one is very, very much a theme. So you gotta have some ideas for that theme in the first place. So some brainstorming beforehand. You could go into it blind, but and just be, you know, creating on the fly too. But I like to throw ideas at a wall first before I totally dive into creating something. I wrote an article on my blog not that long ago about you know, my process using OneNote. And one of the things, the first thing I do when I'm going to create any sort of adventure is totally blank page and just start throwing out notes, sentences, just fragmentary things that I want to, that are just coming to mind, scenes and, you know, NPCs and locations and, you know, just, and then like doing Google image searching and stuff like that. So I would do that generally first before I did any one of these, but I did like the compact nature. I do like the compact nature of it. So I did two of them and I did read all of these. But I filled out two of them, but I think we'll just go over, I think I'm going to go over the character sheets, of each of these, the forms, I guess, of each one of these. Long Knives is definitely very flowcharty. You have all these different factions that point to each other, and then you'll have an inciting incident that kind of triggers it, the reaction of the other factions and what could happen in the future, and then the involvement, and which is sort of like the hook for the players. The Transgression, I just thinking about how to apply this. So you have this one, the idea is that you have an in-group and an out-group, and the out-group is being oppressed. And it doesn't, the form's interesting because it doesn't take a position really of whether the out-group is that's being oppressed is in the right or wrong, because you could have an oppressed group that are, you know, it doesn't take a moral position. Like, and it also opens up the fact that your players could join the oppressors or join the oppressed. So I think that a good job was done on creating this one. I just don't know necessarily how I would use it yet. If I were going to use it, this one made me think a lot about how to properly make this a moral quandary for the players. This one has like a box for what the issue is, and then sort of the environment that the issue is taking place in. And then it has a section for who the opposition, who the oppressors are, and then kind of how they'll come into conflict with each other, and how it will escalate. And then also what happens if the players do absolutely nothing. I think that one's harder to get your players involved. I often find like the more bloodthirsty tables are not going to really care very much about an oppressed people. It has to be kind of a specified goal at the start of the game, I think, to... you could do it as a sandbox in a sandbox game, but I think your players are less likely to get involved for the most part, unless they already have that sort of moral bent to their characters. Then we have a Broken Place, and this one's cool. I like this one a lot. It just revolves around a place that has been taken over by an evil force, and like a shadowy evil force is in control over a power structure, sort of a corrupted power system. And so you have a breakdown of a power structure or a place, and then you have a box for how that power structure is supposed to work and how it's supposed to look from the outside, and then how it's really under control. Then you have a similar box of how like a villain is actually under control over it. So you have these two power structures, one laying under the other. And then this one's funny because it straight up just says the hook. Like, how do players, you just have to write a hook straight up. And the other ones kind of bake in like building a hook. And this was just straight up, you know, create a hook. And then you have to have someone who is involved in these power structures and this corruption who breaks away from it and gets the players involved. And then you have a quest, which is a very classic, obviously, trope. And this one's like most simple, I think, but it actually, the cool thing about it is basically you're filling this one out in very simple, like the players must take the MacGuffin, to a place, watch out for the enemy, because the enemy wants to do something bad. And then there's also rumors of some third party who might be involved. And then it goes into how to introduce the characters to the situation, how they get the MacGuffin in the first place, how they're challenged by the people they're supposed to be worried about, and then complications in that challenge, and then close it out. But in between, on the first box, in between each, you know, get the item, go, watch out because they want to kill you or whatever, and there's rumors of another complication. There's also a complication that you write down in between each one. And that's where you actually get the depth, because you're purposely adding in the complication. It makes you think about how can each one of these go just a little bit sideways? What's the extra little bit of flavor to add in there? So that I like that one a lot. And then the last one is Predator Souls, and it's just my least favorite. It was least interesting to me. You're hunting down a monster, and then it's like sort of an investigation, and it could be like a slasher, or it could be like a true monster. And so there's a bunch of different ways to interpret this one. I'm not sure that this was the best way. So it's just you describe the monster, and the monster is causing like more chaos, and that's in the infection. And it could be a literal infection or infection of fear. And then a congregation of the infection. What does that mean? And then like you have the different sites for the investigation, like where there's been incidents caused by this monster. It was okay. It was the least strong out of these. So I did two of them. Well, one and a half of them. I did Broken Places and I did The Quest. So Broken Places. So I have a campaign setting that I've been working on my own, a homebrew. So I thought, hey, how could I apply this to, you know, what I've got going on in my sandbox world. So I took a city in my setting, in my low magic fantasy setting that I've been writing, and did Broken Places form here and filled it out. And I'm not going to actually like read what I wrote or anything like that, because it's all like notes in short form. And it's actually one of the things that the author of this book recommends is, you know, there isn't a lot of room on these pages for a whole lot of text. And so it's all supposed to be just notes that probably only you would understand if you were to read them. And I write that way a lot when I'm just writing for myself, you know, one whole, you know, mini four or five sessions could go on and it's all taking place from one piece of paper that I have written on. So I get that way of working. So I did Broken Places, and it really did help me flesh out a lot of these note ideas that I had laying around for this that I've been throwing at a wall. And I think that this does organize what I had planned a lot better than I had it organized. So I really like that one. We haven't played through that yet, though. And then I did The Quest, and we've actually started moving through this. And so they are still on the complication for the, you must take the MacGuffin and the players have to acquire the MacGuffin in the first place. The first step, they're still dealing with the complication of that. We had our full session and it had mostly to do with just that complication and that's it. And depending on, you know, that way you see things, that could be, you know, too slow or too fast. But since this is a sandbox thing that I'm running, there is no real too slow or too fast. It's up to the players. They could have ignored it or they could have dove into it. It was up to them. And so they played the whole session on it, and it, you know, everybody had a good time. So I didn't even fully finish filling out this one, and it's already going well. So I will finish it, but now there'll be, you know, maybe some tweaks based on what the players have chosen to do. So that could be a way to look at this too, is you know, it only takes a second to go through these forms. So, you know, as you get halfway through one of them and the players have made choices, you could go back and rewrite it and, you know, have, you know, things that are more glued into the characters and what they're trying to do. Sometimes I do like to lead adventures, you know, lean into what the players are going, you know, going after. And so I'll start to kind of change and warp what my plans were to more fit what they are wanting to do. Yeah, it worked well. So I can recommend this. I think I will throw the author some money on this, because I could definitely even see using it. I could definitely even see using the Predator Souls, but I might use that in conjunction with one of the others. And he doesn't talk about that. He doesn't talk about how you could use, you know, multiple together, but I could see how, like, you could throw a quest into, you know, Transgression or Broken Places. You could throw an intrigue into Broken Places or, you know, The Quest, or so there's ways to string them together and have, I think, a really, as long as you're the type of GM who can think on their feet as far as, you know, quickly coming up with stats and monsters and stat blocks, and you can find that stuff, which, you know, that's easy to do with the internet today. If you're just sitting there with your laptop and you need to Google up some stuff, and if you're playing a game where you have, because this is system agnostic, we happen to be playing in D&D 3.5 right now, but this is system agnostic. So as long as you can think on your feet well enough and you have the resources handy to sort of roll up the stats that you need for, you know, the challenges that you're dealing with and the rules off the top of your head in that way, then this could be the kind of thing where this is all you really need. If you're that kind of, you know, free flowing type of person, and it could get your thoughts in order, and then you could, you know, because there's very small, because one thing is I had to handwrite on these, which I don't usually do with anything, but the boxes are pretty small and I have terrible handwriting. So it was hard for me. I went over the lines a lot, but it's not like it really matters. I'm the only one that's going to look at it. I think that he could have maybe included some editable forms for these as a separate download or something like that, because I would like that. And I mean, I could make them myself but you know, he could just something could have done, I guess, on top of this, but oh, you know, it's fine. So yeah, I took a walk and wrote down one of them in a 15-minute walk, and I'm happy with it. So, and I could do it over and maybe even clean it up. So yeah, I think it's pretty cool. I recommend it to anybody who's, you know, I'm obviously, you know, have spent a lot of time making my own games. You could say I'm pretty practiced in it, but this is a great thing for somebody new, new to a system. And because it's system agnostic, you know, if a lot of game materials these days on new games that are coming out, they don't have the kind of campaign adventure pre-written materials that, you know, like D&D and some of the bigger games have. And I think that leads to like people buying a game, you know, spending $50, $60 on a game and never getting to run it because they don't have, you know, the adventure materials. You know, the company might only come out with like one or two and that's it. Now it's up to you and you don't have the time to you know, your busy lives, kids, jobs, stuff like that. You don't have the time to write your own stuff. And as long as you have, you know, like I said, that ability to improvise, the tools and resources to come up with the math for, you know, the challenges and the NPCs and things like that. And this, you could really build your own stuff pretty quick and get going. So I think it's great for the busy person. It's great for somebody new, or somebody who, you know, just has a hard time organizing, but you have ideas, and you don't know how to get those ideas out in front of your players. So I think I'm talking myself into really endorsing this thing. So yeah, that is Situations for Tabletop Role Playing. Have a great session. It's time for the Play We Want podcast bonus free comic book review. Today I am going to review Zendoggy. And this is a sci-fi comic book that I picked up that was free from Drive-Thru Comics. And it's got a cover price of $2. It's issue number one. And it's from Zendoggy Comics with an X. And the cover's got this lady that's blue. It looks like maybe watercolor. And she's on the cover and she's in space. And there's a planet and there's a spaceship. And there's a guy with a knight-looking guy. Looks like Rom with a diamond in his chest. This is chapter one, Giants in the Playground. And right away there is a short little introduction essay paragraph that talks about how the author Ken Boothlier, creator of Zendoggy, Boothlier, I don't know, he was healthy as a horse and then he had congestive heart failure and it freaked him out and he lost his job, almost lost his house, and got a defibrillator installed in his chest. So his doctor said to keep me on this side of the dirt. And he just realized he'd always loved comic books and he always wanted to draw comic books. And then he almost died. So now he's going to do comic books. And then he thanks some veteran comic book creators, James Hatchie and Lucky Comics publisher John Michael Helmer, and says they rock. So good on those guys for helping Mr. Boothlier out at Zendoggy Comics. So this is a like high concept cosmic deal, and it's all in black and white. It looks like it's all pen, and then maybe computer shaded, but still black and white. And it's all text boxes, and it's from the point of view of, I guess, some sort of giant cosmic space knight guy, and he needs the help of Zendoggy to take care of a planet that is also a giant plague, I think, is what the deal is. And yeah, totally looks like Rom or maybe even Darkhawk. And he's gonna destroy the planet, and he shoots laser beams out of his giant diamond chest, and he blows up this planet-sized plague, and inside of it is a diamond. Inside of that planet's a diamond. And then he dies, I guess, and Zindagi's like the lady. So Zindagi is the lady that he released from some other rock, I don't know. And then this giant stone guardian guy with the, that looks like Rom, he had a diamond on his chest, like I said. Now it's like opening like a door. And she goes in there. And he kept saying, protect the children, the Bache, B-A-C-H-E. And she goes in there, and the Bache, which are turns out to be a bunch of more floating diamonds, saying, help us, feed us. And so she says she can help them, and she does some energy waves of some kind. And I guess that's helping. And then a spaceship shows up, and they're full of humans. It's the Gadiali flagship of the nomadic human fleet. And they want to capture one of these diamonds at all costs. A guardian gem is what they're calling them. And then we see the three humans. And it's not great art. It's kind of kid art. And they're kind of dressed Star Trek-y a little bit. They've got the symbols on their necks. And their names are kind of funny. Senator Andrew Agarwal, Admiral Zobe Patel, and Commander Evan Anand. That's kind of like throw letters out there, random sounds out their names. And they show up, and they want to capture one of these gems, and they send out these shuttles that apparently use black holes to move around somehow, and they also use their black holes, like the three of these little shuttles are tractor beaming this diamond, and the humans are happy. And then suddenly the three ships blow up, and they're like, what just happened? Operations officer, report! And they're like, we've lost all three shuttles. No sign of survivors. I don't cause the wait. The object is on a collision course for the Gadiali, sir. And the energy readings are reading a massive power signature. And then they say, brace for impact. And then it says, and then you can see Zindagi with a giant trail of energy behind her rushing towards the spaceship. And then it says, next issue, birth, purpose, and ... fury. And then on the back cover, so that was the end of that. And then the back cover has, from the world of BBC TV's Doctor Who, The Adventures of Olive Hawthorne. And it's in color, and it's Devil's End. And it's like a witch, and she's got demons behind her. So, yeah, I won't be reading another one of these. It started out like it was almost a creation myth, is the feeling I got from the beginning of it. Like, and then this spaceship showed up, and it's very like 70s looking spaceship. You know, it's very pointy, tube like spaceship, which is fine. Yeah, the writing wasn't great. There was even a typo, which, hey, typos happen. It's fine. I'm horrible. I typo everything, so I'm not that whatever about it. But it looked like the word couscous instead, because it was concus instead of conscious in there. So, yeah, nothing to write home about here. I won't read any more of it. Don't. I wouldn't waste your time with it. It's fine. And if we're doing this little bonus bit, I've read it a number trying to find one that's even really worth talking about. And I don't know that this one was either. Like I said before, I can't draw. I don't have any comic books. They got to be doing something right. So, you know, it's the day. Do you, man. If this is keeping you healthy, then keep doing it by all means. And if you love it, definitely keep doing it. So, yeah, that was another random comic book review. Have a good session.